Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, this is how we start off the week.
Yes, this is Monday.
Now, you told me that you were trying to get a hashtag going, thank God it's Monday.
Yeah, TGIM.
How's that working?
It's good. Today, I also introduced, what was it? This is how we Monday.
This is how we Monday.
Hashtag this is Monday, you know?
Exactly.
It's just all the good Monday vibes.
We love Monday.
We do. We do love Monday.
And this show is going to be a fine example of how good a Monday can be.
Yes.
We're going to kick off the show with Bo Henderson with Rich Life Advisors, and then we're going to end the show with Jim Lorraine, the CEO of America's Warrior Partnership. So we're going to start with Bo. Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio, Bo Henderson, CEO, Rich Life Advisors.
Hey, it's good to be here. I'm excited to talk business with you guys.
All right, Bo. Well, tell us about Rich Life Advisors. How are you serving folks?
Well, Rich Life Advisors is a retirement planning firm, and 16 years in the financial planning world and in the business. What I realized about halfway into that career was that too much of that industry is driven by product. People who sell product trying to make product fit a person's situation. And what we really do different at Rich Life Advisors is we put a focus on strategy. Let's make sure we get crystal clear on who you are, what you need to accomplish, and let's create a strategy that works right for you. Then and only then can we go find the tools to accomplish that strategy.
Well, I find it interesting. Your background is a lot in psychology and behavior. Talk about that a little bit. I have a little bit of that background as well. I have a minor in psychology, and I learned a lot about social psychology and behavior. And that influences a lot of people's lives in ways that maybe it's not obvious to them, or maybe they're not even aware of.
You know, when it comes to money and finances and retirement, and you're right, I was actually going to graduate school to be a psychologist. My father passed away the year I was going to graduate school. I stayed home to help mom with his business and some real estate, and that got me on the track of the financial planning, and that's been where I've gone ever since. But it's so true. We get the strategy right. The other key component that I haven't really talked about yet is the behavior. It's why do we do what we do?
Right.
And why do we a lot of times do the exact wrong thing we should do to hit our goals?
Right. Because retirement, really, it's not rocket science, right? If you start young and put a little bit away and be just kind of consistent with it, things should pretty much take care of themselves, right?
You know, in a lot of cases, it's math, but we get in trouble. You know, we listen to what did our neighbors say we should do? What did our brother-in-law say we should do? And then we let emotions run into play where it gets back into the behavior of if we can have a solid strategy and have a few things we know to do and a few things we know not to do, you're going to be successful.
Now, what is the biggest challenge when you're working with clients?
Overall, the biggest challenge is really changing some of there's a very traditional model of financial planning out there of you go in, you tell me what investment I need to buy to make money, right? And shifting that mindset that I was talking about earlier is let's get really clear on what is it that you want to accomplish? What are your sources of income? What are the goals you have? Do you want to, you know, do you want to travel the world with your spouse? Do you want to buy that cabin in the woods? Do you want to start a business? What is it that really excites you and makes retirement exciting to you? Let's create a strategy towards that. And when I can shift the focus to what people actually want, they actually will stick to their plan.
Now, when you're working with a client, what is the typical age that you get engaged?
You know, it used to, the company has evolved over the years as I've gotten older. But where the most crucial decisions are made and where the real strategy is done, it's typically 50 north. So say 50 to 65, we're really positioning people in that transition window from working life to life in retirement.
So that's where at that point, have they already, you're having to kind of manage a change from somebody they had been working with to you guys? Or is it most of these people haven't done anything and then they're working with a financial advisor for the first time?
Yeah, it's both. In a lot of cases, they've worked with somebody that maybe ran their company's 401k plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're transitioning over more from an accumulation model, which is a lot of the model out there in the financial services industry, to a retirement income distribution model.
So now, when you're working with those people, are they at the point where they are kind of in the second act of their career, or they're retiring and not working? What is the typical kind of next
Yeah, now that's a good question. What's become more and more the norm is the retirement that we might have known from our parents or grandparents. It's changed a bit in that we don't just work 30 years and then stop and then we're done. I see more and more people going back and consulting a couple days a week. People going and starting their own job on the side, because the reality of we're living so much longer, making a couple thousand dollars a month after you retire makes a big difference in how to make those assets last.
Now, what about what percentage are more and more people saying, I want to leave some sort of legacy? Do I want to do some philanthropy, or I want to do work that has more meaning?
No, that's a lot of times, that's one of the things we really have to spend a lot of work on is, who are you in retirement? What is your identity? What is meaningful and fulfilling to you? Because we get so in tune with who we are at our business or our work. I had a pilot from Delta a couple weeks ago. I met with him, and he said, hey, Bo, I used to walk down the terminal, and people would part out of the way because they respected my authority. Mm-hmm. I retired. He had to deal with clinical depression because he lost that identity.
Right.
So one of those things is to think about in that transition window, what is it that – who are you going to be in retirement? What is that identity going to be? Because if you don't plan for that ahead of time, it can have some bad consequences.
Because every day you have to do something.
Right.
Right. And then in their head, they're like, oh, I'm going to play golf, and I'm going to sit by the pool. You know, you do that for a few weeks, you're like, is there something else?
Well, I was in San Diego talking to my Uber driver. He retired with a great pension, didn't need the money, but he said, you know what? I was finding myself going and taking two naps a day because I was so bored. My buddies got worried about me, so they told me to try Uber, and he loves it.
Just to talk to the people. Right.
And that social interaction and engagement was a piece he didn't think about or plan for, but it's made him happy again.
So now walk me through what those conversations look like. When they're working with you, it's not like they go, here's all my money, and then I don't check in with you, right? Like there's some rhythm of us getting together and adjusting or seeing where we're at, right?
You know, one of the funny – it's kind of funny, but it's very serious too, is the early conversation is – part of what I want to do in this first couple of meetings, let's make sure we like each other, because if we're going to work together on this, we're going to be working together for the next 20, 30 plus years.
Right.
So that's important. And it's kind of, I say it jokingly, but it's serious too. You want somebody that if you need to buy a new car and you have a few options, you want somebody you're comfortable calling and saying, how does this fit in my overall situation, my overall plan? But the conversations really, we start with clarity and get a really good snapshot of where we are today. Believe it or not, only 5% of people actually know exactly what their expenses are and what's coming in and what's going out. We can get clarity on where we are.
Even with all these online QuickBooks, all that stuff, they don't know?
And it's funny, in this country, the retirement strategy for most Americans is, I'm going to not think about it and hope it works out okay. And that's not a great strategy.
No, hope is not a strategy.
And to that point is, when that's your strategy, it often puts us in a position to be reactive, where we have less options and we're behind the eight ball, so to speak. So that's one of the big messages I have is, let's be proactive. Let's get ahead of the curve. Let's have these conversations. Let's meet regularly. Communicate when something changes. A job changes. You start a job. You stop a job. Anything. Let's communicate so we can proactively navigate that strategy.
Now, how many revenue streams do you recommend somebody have? Because a lot of people have one revenue stream, their job, and they don't really have a diversified portfolio other than their job.
Right. When it comes out, in all retirement strategies, we have at least what I call three buckets. We have, because there's different jobs we need to accomplish in retirement, and we need a bucket that produces a revenue stream for income. Mm-hmm. And then we need a bucket that has long-term growth to account for inflation and maybe some emergencies way down the road. And we have some liquidity issues. So all those buckets have different jobs and different tools actually account for that. But as far as pure income streams to live off of, the more the merrier. You know, if you're blessed enough to have a pension, you've got a couple of social securities in the mix, you've got a 401k you can throw in there, you got a side business, the more income we have coming in, the easier just to cover those expenses. And the key with the retirement game is, a lot of times, I don't know if you guys remember this marketing piece, it was, I don't remember what company, but it was, what's your number? It's like, what's this magic number I need to have to be successful and be able to retire?
Is that a thing?
Well, what I want to say is that that's not really the right number. Right. It's not 1 million, 2 million, 5 million. It's specific to you. It's the key numbers we need to understand is the cash flow, because retirement is a cash flow game. I have people living really well on $3,000 a month because they have no expenses. Right. And I have other people struggling with $10,000 a month come in. So it's a cash flow game. And if we can get those numbers in line, that's the transition work that really needs to be done.
Now, how do you help them manage through these unknowns, the known unknowns like healthcare, like assisted living? Like, am I going to need to be somewhere that costs a lot of money, future me, you know?
Right.
Like, how do we account for some of those unknowns?
Part of every strategy, we have to address long-term care and at least have a conversation about it, because that same mentality we talked about earlier, hope everything turns out okay, is not a great strategy because it can blow up an otherwise solid income plan. So when we talk about that, what we have to do is either we have to address it and either say, okay, is there money set aside in a bucket that we could self-fund an event? Do we have long-term care insurance, or do we have some kind of hybrid life insurance with maybe a rider that would kick in if we needed long-term care insurance? So there's not a one-stop shop for that, but we got to make sure we have the conversation and address it so that we're not surprised and a long-term care expense, either in-home or at a facility, doesn't blow up our income plan.
Now, do you ever have conversations with people who think they have it together and you ask them some of these hard questions like, oh, what's your long-term care? Like these, all of a sudden they thought they had it figured out, and then they don't realize the expense of something like that. And that could blow up someone's plan.
And that's one of my biggest jobs, is to help people get clear on where they are and then to help them find the gaps or the vulnerabilities mm-hmm. that are in the plan. It's almost like a SWOT analysis in business. We're looking for vulnerabilities and more of the opportunities to address those vulnerabilities. So that's really the role a financial advisor should play, is to help you address those gaps, because we're north of 3,000 clients over the last 16 years, and I've yet to see a strategy that didn't have some kind of gap in it that could be tweaked and strengthened.
Mm-hmm. And then what are some of those gaps that people have that are like kind of the long-term care one is one that, mm-hmm. that they kind of gloss over. They didn't realize that
right.
they have to put something in place.
Yep, you got healthcare is a big one. The average couple is going to spend about $265,000 in healthcare expenses in retirement. Right. People don't, if you don't account for that, it's going to come back and bite you.
Right.
Another one is Social Security. Claiming, there's over 500 ways to claim your Social Security strategy. And I have people every month that come in and they're leaving $40,000, $70,000, in some cases $100,000, $200,000 on the table of money they could receive if they just understood the rules to pick the best strategy. So it's really just looking for those gaps and holes that they can fill. Another big one's inflation. Okay, if we say we need $4,000 a month, that's not going to work if that's what you have lined up to last for the next 30 years. We've got to account for a realistic inflation.
Right, and realistic inflation today is different than realistic inflation, 20 years ago.
Right. And that's the key, too, is we plan with the information we have today, including our personal information. But also the thing is we have to build in, and I really try to set the expectation that a plan has to be flexible. Because one thing I can tell you is that life's never going to work out like the spreadsheet we set up. So we have to have the flexibility to adjust and shift. And, again, that's another component of being successful is being a rigid plan will never work.
So now what things do you put in place to help people manage the human fear factor and behavior components of this? Like, as soon as they have, a nightmare scenario would be you're like, okay, today's the day I retire. And then next week, the market goes down, something bad happens like that. Then they're panicking. They're like, pull everything out. And then you're like, just kind of stay the course. Like, how do you manage that part?
Yeah, just wait it out. No, the emotion and the psychology is very tough. But I think the key is, we were talking about earlier, is there's different roles we have in retirement. You have an income, a growth, a liquidity. And what happens in a lot of cases is, say we grow, a lot of people grow a big 401k or a big IRA. That's their main source of money. And they try to do all those jobs we talked about out of that one bucket of money.
Right.
Whereas if we break it out, if we protect the pieces of money we need to count on for our paycheck month to month, then we can afford to be more aggressive over here in the long-term growth bucket, because it's only money that we're not needing to use for 10 to 15 years. So if we actually get our buckets set up properly, it's automated for the most part, and that helps a lot with the behavior. Because, one, if money's not in the right place for the job it has, or if it's too easy to get to sometimes, if it's in your checking account, sometimes
right.
we all know it's easy to spend it. Go buy that RV instead of thinking, oh, that needs to last me for 10 more years.
Right. So now how often are you checking in with people? Is it quarterly, yearly?
We have a touch quarterly, and people are – it's really a personal preference. I have a commitment that we sign that once a year, we're going to do a formal update. What's new? Are we on track for our strategy? What's changed? What needs to be adjusted? What's changed in your life? But I have some clients that want to touch base monthly, and they're proactive, and they'll call, and that's fine. Whatever, it's kind of a what you need. And then, honestly, some people, it's hard to get them to come in for that yearly appointment. It's kind of a personal thing, but that's, on a very minimum, we need to be updating, checking, and making sure things are lined up.
Right, because things could have changed. Like, the kid could have graduated college now, right. Or I'm going to retire in 6 months, or my spouse got laid off. Like, things are changing every
right.
year.
And that's one of the biggest things up front is just I encourage clients, be proactive, communicate with me, and that puts me in the best position to help you the best I can.
So now in your career, you've written a lot of books. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, the first book, this is the core book I've written, and it's the 10 Investments for True Wealth. And what I learned with that was I saw myself included in my 20s and 30s. And I saw a lot of us chasing this idea that if I have enough money, if I have enough stuff, if I have enough things, I'll be successful, I'll be happy, I'll be fulfilled. And what the shift for me was, a lot of my clients in their 60s and 70s were like, you know what? What makes me happy is going to the beach with my grandkids. It's the memories I have that I created over the course of my life. It's the relationships I invest in. So the 10 Investments for True Wealth was really creating a life philosophy or a life strategy that you go back and put a financial strategy that is in line and congruent with your life strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what that was about.
And then when you're working with your clients, do you do anything to involve like their kids? I just read an interesting article that said that the vast majority of kids don't work with the same financial advisor as their parents did.
You know, and I think that's just a lack of again, a proactive step. Mm-hmm. One of the things we do is when we're going through this process, we'll create a binder, and the binder has tabs for everything in your financial life. And the instructions are really simple from your wills, your accounts, your investments, insurances, is anytime you get a new statement, the current statement goes in your tab on the binder. And what that does, as simple as that sounds, it's been one of the most valuable tools I get feedback on for people to have everything in one place and
right.
current. And one of the things we talk about is to set up a meeting or a dinner with the kids to say, hey, if something happens to me, something happens to me and mom, grab the green binder and call this guy in the deal so that I can go back and pick up and make sure that what the client was working on is carried out with the kids or at least explained.
Now, but what do you do anything to begin relationships with the kids?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though the focus is that transition demographic 50 plus, I consider it a family client, mm-hmm. right? I don't typically go out and work with a 20-something, so to speak, but if it's a kid of a client, then we'll start that process now. If we need to start, they're starting their career, we need to start a Roth IRA.
Right, just some basic stuff and just put them on kind of a...
Absolutely.
A set and forget it plan for a while, right, until you can jump back in later on.
And a lot of times I'll get the parents to be advocates to get the kids started because, on my end, it's great when somebody comes to me at 50 years old and they've been working on it for 20 years.
Right.
So,
well, compounding, that's...
Right.
Who said that? Einstein, one of them said that was
eighth wonder of the world.
Exactly. So now for you, you decided to focus on 50-year-old. I guess that's where the money, you know.
Well, they've accumulated money, but the real passion there is the decisions there are the most crucial, meaning if I'm 30, even if I'm 40, I make a mistake, the market crashes on me and I'm not set up properly, I can usually correct. I can usually bounce
right.
back. But if I make the wrong decisions before I leave, some of those you don't bounce back from, and they're the most critical.
Because you don't
decisions.
Have the time.
You don't have the timeline, right. And sometimes it's a matter of, you know, if you have $1 million in your 401k, but you get to retirement with $600,000, that drastically changes your plan and scenario. So that's a lot of it is it's just the crucial decisions.
Because the stakes are higher.
The stakes are much higher. And the need for strategy, because you kind of hit on it earlier that when you're younger, the goal is to accumulate. Let's get up some good saving habits and accumulate as much as we can. But then we really shift into strategy, and that's fun for me. I like getting all the puzzle pieces of your financial mm-hmm. life on the table and finding the path and helping you create that strategy.
Now, do you lean on any online tools to help with communication or with kind of some of the information exchange?
Yeah, we use a CRM. It's called Redtail, but basically it's a really nice interactive made just for financial services.
But is there a portal for the customer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can communicate with the customer. They can see their things and they can communicate back with us. Mm-hmm.
And then what about, can I make investment changes from that portal, or I always have to work with you to do something like that?
Typically, no, you're not going to go in. See, if you're going to go make buy your own investments, it'd be more of a retail portal I would set you up on, something like that. If you wanted an account to buy and trade your own things, usually it would be a conversation with us, because again, in a strategy, we don't necessarily want people buying and selling stuff in between check-ins.
Right.
So
it's always, that's part of what you get when they work with you guys, is that hands-on,
right,
kind of, we're helping you every step of the way. And, you know, if you want to make a financial change, we're there to consult with you for it.
Right, right. And we've built a team. I do the retirement strategy. We have a CPA on the team. I brought in a guy to do just health care and health insurance because it got so complex, mm-hmm, that I was like, I need somebody that's all they focus on. So that's what we really try to do, is find be a one-stop shop for somebody to at least have the resources to get what they're looking for.
So now you're the quarterback of my kind of trusted advisor?
That's it. Yeah, that's my role, is to be the quarterback and usually the point of contact. And I tend to do well with that. Just with the track record and what I've done over time, and people seem like to interact with me. And like I said, that conversation about make sure you like who you're going to work with. And I truly enjoy what I do. And I think that makes a big difference with clients too. They can tell that I love doing this.
But the different elements for a lot of people are they have their own CPA or they have their own insurance person.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's fine too. If you have a trust, but you'd be amazed how many people don't have those pieces in place.
Really?
And they're coming looking saying, hey, I need a CPA. I need to get a will done and a power of attorney. But if you have somebody, a trusted advisor, I actually love those opportunities to introduce ourselves, mm-hmm, to each other, so that if something comes up, we actually know who we are and we can work together.
But on your team, I can have nothing and then have everything.
Right, right. And that's what a lot of people are looking for. But if that's not, again, if you have your team to bring to the table, we can adjust for that.
Right. So you adjust to whatever the situation is.
Right.
And then what's the kind of the pain the person's having where it's time to reach out to the Rich Life folks?
Really, I find this happening in the, there's no mistake about the 50. Somewhere when we reach about 50 years old, the reality of, holy cow, this is coming. This is coming soon. I'm probably not where I want to be. Or I've done some things, and I don't know that I've done the best I could. So those are the questions I hear. If you find yourself asking yourself, I don't know when I can retire. I don't know if I have the right strategy to retire. I don't know if I have the right investments. Those are the kind of questions when you start asking yourself and you start realizing that it's right around the corner. That's when it's time to come to a strategy. But from a timeline standpoint, I love to have a good 10 years to work with, because that gives me time to help you position in the most favorable position possible to go into that next stage of your life.
Right. So if you're retiring at 55 or 60, you'd rather be talking to them in their 40s,
right,
and early 50s.
Absolutely.
Rather than the day before that, you know, they walk out the door, right?
Right. It's much harder to figure out after you retire.
Right.
Now we're reactively trying to put things together.
Right. So then you need a few years to kind of at least set the table so that everything's in place.
Right. Right.
Well, good stuff, Bo. Thank you so much for sharing your story. If somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Go to richlifeadvisors.com, and you can let me know if you have any questions. You can find out how to contact us. We have a lot of resources. I just did a book called The 12 Steps to Retirement Success, where you can actually take a little quiz and judge where you are in your retirement readiness. It's got a retirement readiness assessment on it. So check those tools out and just let me know if you have any questions or anything you need.
And you have support groups for recently retired people to help them manage their free time?
That's right. We're going to figure out, we'll match you up and see what, no. See, but it is finding out that who I am in retirement, finding out how,
right,
to address that. It's been
the new you, right? Because it's not the same. You know, people used to return your calls when you worked for that big company, and now you're kind of on your own a little bit.
Right. It's a new, really a new phase of life.
Good stuff. Thank you so much again for sharing your story.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Thanks
That's
for having me.
Bo Henderson, Rich Life Advisors. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, got Jim Lorraine, and he is with America's Warrior Partnership. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks. And I have to say, Bo, that was fantastic. And I'll go to your website and look it up. But, I mean, a lot of the things that you talked about are a lot of things that we'll talk about, too, because it's, you know, when you transition from the military and you've been a squad leader, or you've been a, you know, you have a high school education, you're a squad leader, you're leading men in battle and women in battle. Then you come home, it's a whole different thing. Now you're back, you're a high school graduate again in the workforce. So sort of like transitioning from your retirement into being from workforce into retirement. You're Delta airline pilot.
Right.
Same thing.
Right.
Yeah, I loved it.
So go ahead. So tell us about America's Warrior Partnership. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so America's Warrior Partnership, our mission is to empower communities to empower veterans. We have created a community-based model to organize, teach communities how to organize themselves to serve veterans. Matter of fact, we wrote a book, like you, Bo, wrote a book about it. It just came out on Google and Barnes & Noble. It's called The Community Integration Playbook. It's soup to nuts for a community group to understand how do they reach out and build proactive relationships with veterans ahead of the crisis, get them connected to resources that will help improve their quality of life, whether they're in the workforce, whether it's school, or whether they're getting ready to transition to retirement. We serve, our model is to serve all veterans, regardless of whether you're wounded or not. And we're in 9 communities throughout the United States right now. We've got connections with about 43,000 veterans of all eras. And our model is a proven model that is a relationship-based approach, not a transactional. It's not a website. It's knowing the veteran on a personal level, one at a time through the communities. And in the book, we talk about a bell curve, and on the left side of the bell curve are homeless veterans as an example. A lot of community groups support homeless veterans. We serve those as much as we serve the philanthropist who wants to give back, or the veteran who retired who wants to find purpose in their life and do something as a volunteer. And then we work within the business community. A lot of veterans are in the workforce. Most of the time, they either don't know the resources that are available to them, or they don't know how to connect to them. They know what they're looking for, but they just don't know how to get there. And we teach communities how to do this, how to engage the veteran and connect them to resources to improve their quality of life.
Now, how do you define community?
And communities, it's a group of people. Group of people, geography, group of people, a company, group of people, a membership organization.
So it doesn't have to be a city. It doesn't have to be a government. It can be individuals. It can be companies. It could be any concerned person.
Exactly. Yeah. So here in Atlanta, our partner is the Warrior Alliance. They're a community-based group that we've taught how to do our approach to serving veterans. The Warrior Alliance serves the greater Atlanta area. They're about a year in to doing this mission, and they're getting their feet under them, and they're doing a great job. They are the most networked community that we have here in Atlanta. We have an enormous amount of resources, and what the Warrior Alliance is doing is connecting those resources to the veterans that they know.
And then what your group is doing is giving them a framework to work more efficiently and effectively?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a model that teaches them how to do it. We also have an information system that we built that's veteran-focused and how to connect the dots between the veteran and the resource in the community, whether it's, again, for housing or for homeless veterans, or whether it's looking for volunteer opportunities. We have a community, as an example, that we worked in early on in the game, had 195 homeless veterans, and in 18 months we reduced it to 7 and then kept it at single digits for a 5-year period. So very, very successful because it's relationship-based. It's how do you get the veteran who's homeless housed? How do you get them access to their education benefits so they can go to school? How do you get them into an internship that can lead to employment? And then how do you get them long-term employment so that they never go back to being homeless again?
So now, how did you build this playbook? How did you kind of learn, okay, this path is effective?
Yeah. So, I'm a retired lieutenant colonel out of the Air Force. Spent 23 years serving my country, predominantly in Special Operations Command. When I retired, I walked out the door one day and walked back in the next day as a civilian, and then did another 6 years at United States Special Operations Command, where I developed a program that served all wounded, ill or injured SEALs, Rangers, Green Berets, Air Commandos, Marine Raiders. When we started, we had 681. When I left in 2011, we had about 5,500 who were in that case. We had the lowest suicide rate amongst all of DOD. Unfortunately, I had one suicide amongst the group. And the question was, how are you guys so effective? And I said, it's because we know the veteran. We know who they are. We build a relationship with them. And they know that regardless of how difficult it gets, that there's always somebody who's going to be there for them. And what we talk about is that we measure hope. So we provided the veterans with a lot of hope. And
but how do you measure hope?
Yeah, there's a great scale that was perfected and validated at a University of Kentucky, a guy by the name of Richard Snyder back in the 70s. And it's a 12-question scale, and it measures how hopeful you are or how hopeless you are. We use that in our communities. Like we do a survey amongst across the community. So in Buffalo, New York, we measured that. What we found was the veterans who had the lowest hope, the biggest thing that they were looking for in the community was transportation. And so what we did was we went back to Buffalo with our community group up there and said, how do we change the bus routes that get the veterans from where they live to the hospitals where they need to go to? And based on the data, the community came back and said, yeah, we'll do that. The next year we came back and measured it. Transportation dropped. Transportation wasn't an issue. The veterans' hope was going up. Transportation needs were going down.
So you're tracking kind of the trend, the hope line?
Yeah, we're tracking hope line. Yeah, and that's what we look for is we can measure hope. So we've been working with this company. We measure hope within a company. How hopeful are your veterans? And against the national average, the company that we've been working with is 2 points higher than the national average. And the CEO can look and say, you know, I'm doing really good work here. But to his credit, how can I do better? And it's really how do you build a relationship with those veterans? So again, we have whether it's corporate or whether it's a community, how hopeful is your community? On the assessment, we also do it by zip code. So in the greater Atlanta area, you can say the veterans up in the northeast area, they've got high hope. Maybe the vets in another area of the city may have lower hope. Now the community can focus their energy on those veterans to bring their hope up.
And then is there any correlation, like the highest hope, what does that tell you? That people have the highest hope, are they happiest? Are they successful? Like what is the...
So the highest hope, they categorize themselves as having a positive, high quality of life. The number one things that veterans with the highest hope are looking for, I mentioned about the transportation with low hope. With high hope, the number one thing that veterans are looking for are volunteer opportunities, peer networks with other veterans, and they're looking for financial counseling. Oh. Yep. They're not looking for financial assistance, whereas the low hope are looking for financial assistance. How can you help me with funding? The high hope are looking for how can I manage my money? How can I create a budget? How can I look to the future?
Even farther out.
Yeah.
So at first, the low hope, it's about survival and let me take care of basic necessities. And the higher you go in the hope scale, it's more about giving back and serving, and that you get out of kind of yourself and then you're more into others.
You should be in this business. Exactly. That's it. You know, it's internal focus for the homeless, external focus for those who have high hope. And what we find is high hope doesn't necessarily mean high paying job. It doesn't necessarily mean all the things that other people may consider success, because in the individual's mind, their level of hope, someone who's has a house, it's secure, it's safe, they have a job to go to, and they're occupied, I'm pretty hopeful about the future. Whereas some other folks would look at it and go, "That I wouldn't categorize myself there."
Now, does this system work primarily for veterans because they are people who at a young age said, I'm choosing service, so they have that kind of service mindset to some degree?
No, you know, we've had others come to us in Atlanta. The CDC has come to us and said, can we look at your model and how you've approached this? Because it could be applied to other...
Right. Would it work in a poverty situation where they're not military, but they come from extreme poverty?
Yeah, it would. What's unique is that about veterans and about the population of veterans is that they have resources that other citizens who haven't served don't Right. necessarily have. And it makes it easier to solve. To solve for the solution with veterans, but it could be applied to non-veterans too. The approach is, again, it's a relationship-based approach. And you hear over and over and over again, I have a website, go to the website, fill it out, and you'll there's an algorithm that'll connect you to resources. And what we found is that's great for the people who are looking for assistance, but it's the ones who are living in the shadows and who aren't necessarily looking for assistance. One of the things, to go back to what you said, was that veterans have volunteered to raise their hand to serve in the military. What you find is that they're less likely to raise their hand and say, I need help.
Really?
Yeah, much less. So it's not only...
Is that a personality trait prior to the military, or is that something the military ingrains that, hey, this is, you know, your army of one, this is make it happen and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so it's ingrained. And what you get when you come out of the military is that it's not about me. And so when, you know, whether you're coaching a veteran about interviewing for a job, it's important to tell the veteran, we say, it's important to tell them about you and what you've done. And they have a tough time doing that, because their whole career, in their whole time in the military, they've talked about what we've done,
right,
and what we're doing. And to that light, it's tough to get them to say, this is what I need. Rather, it's like, what do we need? And so
you're like unteaching them.
Yeah, or you're unteaching, but you're understanding them. You're understanding veterans and who they are and the culture of the veteran population. What you find is that veterans can connect very quickly to other veterans. I was out in Oklahoma City with the company that we're also working with, and walked into a room. Everybody was sort of standoffish. I told them that I served in the military. And I said I've been in Somalia, the Central Middle East, and Desert Shield 1, Desert Shield 2, Iraq and Afghanistan. And then immediately guys were saying, were you here? Where did you serve there? I was there too. And then there's automatically this connection. One of the other things that we see is that amongst the veteran population is, if you're my friend and I trust you and he's your friend, then I trust him. Because if he's your friend, then I'll trust him. I always tell people, when I left the military, one of the biggest hurdles I faced when I came back into the civilian world was trust. In the military, you know who to trust. Someone who walks in the room, you know almost everything about them from looking at their uniform and who they are, where they are, and what their position is. In the civilian world, you have no idea. And so it's these touch points that you sort of have to get used to. And what we try to do in our program is to build a relationship so that you can transition into civilian life and be successful.
But in order to be effective, you find that it's military people building relationships individually, human to human, with other military people are the most effective, quickest way to really affect change on the struggling military person.
Yeah, you know, I would say that if there was a choice between someone who served in the military and somebody who didn't, the push would be towards the veteran. However, with my staff and with the folks who I've worked with in communities, there's a lot of people who haven't served in the military who have a great perspective of civilian life and then can bring it back to the military. So I don't think it's a one size fits all. You know, our model that we look for is that if you've seen one veteran, you've seen one veteran. It's one size fits one.
Right.
And it's good to have the perspective of someone who didn't serve in the military, who's working with somebody who did serve in the military, to sort of balance it out, because, you know, two things are inevitable when you serve in the military. You're not going to live forever, and you're going to be a vet. And you know that. Everybody, that's what everybody faces.
So now, what do you need right now?
Yeah, so for us, we've got a couple of big things coming. So in Atlanta, on the 5th through the 7th of September, down at the Omni Hotel, where we have our annual symposium, and this is our fifth annual symposium that we're holding. On the first night, there's a great group in Atlanta that we work with called Vetlanta, and Vetlanta is connected to a lot of different corporations throughout the United States. They've got an event for us on Wednesday night. Thursday, we've got Sebastian Junger, who's a renowned author, is going to be put together with one of our board members, Sal Junta. Sal's the first living post 9/11 veteran to receive a Medal of Honor. And Sebastian and Sal were at the same place when with the events that led to his receiving the medal. So they'll be together on Thursday. We have also recognizing Senator Elizabeth Dole for all the work that she's done with caregivers and military families. On Friday, big day because we've got the Secretary of the VA coming in to talk about, he's new secretary, to talk about where, how does it work with communities and how does it all work together. That's what's happening on this week with the symposium. The other piece that we have is just people to be aware of what the community integration playbook is. Again, you can find it on Google. Because our goal is that if we can get more communities serving veterans, and they can serve the veterans that the VA may not know about or that others may not know about, we believe that you'll improve the quality of life for the community. And not only for the community, but then it rolls out across the nation. So the more people that are serving veterans, I think it's a good thing. And then for us, more interest. You're in Pensacola. One of our community groups is in Pensacola. We're looking in Arizona, too, in Phoenix. We're working. Just get the word out.
So now, for you, you're based here in Atlanta, but you're trying to set up communities all over the country, right? Your work isn't based here in Atlanta.
Yeah, so we're based out of Augusta, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And our community partner is the Warrior Alliance here in Atlanta. We have a group in Buffalo, New York, Greenville, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Panhandle of Florida, Pensacola, Orange County, California, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Cleveland, Ohio.
But you're rolling out this community integration playbook in other communities, and you're just trying to serve the veteran community wherever they are, and they're all over the place, and the need's all over the place.
Yes, to teach communities how to serve all veterans. There's so many programs that just serve disabled vets or post-9/11 veterans who are disabled, or it's very stovepiped. And what we're saying is there are a lot of veterans who you don't know, and there are a lot of veterans in the community that could not only help your community, but could use help. There's a couple of things. We're doing a suicide study that's nationwide called Operation Deep Dive. And one of the things that we see is that the veterans who don't seek assistance, who sort of stay in the shadows with traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress, there's this late onset of those symptoms. So you get out of the military and you're fine, and then 5 to 7, 10 years later, your symptoms start to get worse. Those are the veterans who aren't raising their hand and saying, I need help. Those aren't the veterans who are seeking help at all. And they're sort of deteriorating without anyone knowing it. That's the population that's underserved. And they may be in the workforce, and they may be in the school setting, and they may be retired. Mm-hmm. And so how do you connect them back into a community that understands what's happening and not only can recognize what's happening, but can serve them too? Because I think that's the other piece, is that what we bring to the table is that we can not only recognize that there's an issue with a veteran, we can bring the resources to bear to take care of the issue.
And then the challenge is that this person, it isn't always going to say, I need help. And they're slowly, gradually isolating themselves and making it more difficult. So they have to be found almost and identified and then kind of
to
be aware of this.
Yeah, integrate back into the community. Come on back in. It's right. Okay. Come on out. And guess what? What you thought was a mountain that you couldn't get over is something that is a hill that we can get over easy. And let's go ahead and connect you to the resources and then stick with you as you go through it. One of the reasons we're doing the suicide study, and Atlanta is a big player in it, there's enormous support through Atlanta for our study, is that what we wanted to find was who are the veterans who we don't know? Who are the veterans? So the VA, they do an awesome job, but they serve 55% of the veterans are served by the VA. There's another 45% that aren't even connected to the VA. And we think that they should be connected to the community, and some of those may assimilate and be reconnected back into the VA, but those are the ones who we should never forget. There's 21 million veterans in the United States. It's my belief that nationwide, if we take it piece by piece, community by community, we probably can know all 21 million. And I think it's something that they deserve.
Now, if I'm in a community that isn't using your playbook right now, what makes me want to reach out to you? Like, what am I doing that I see that you're going to be able to help me?
Yeah. So if you're working in your community, it's a structure. The other pieces that we also, what I have back in Augusta is I have a team, we call it the network. And the network is, it basically connects the communities to national programs. When I travel throughout the United States and when I talk to my colleagues, national nonprofits that have a lot of resources, what they're looking for, they don't know who to serve. And local community programs know who to serve, but they don't have the resources to do it. And there's this chasm between those that have the resources and those that know the people that need them.
Right.
And what we serve to do is connect the two.
So you're a matchmaker.
We're a business show. We're a broker.
Right. But you help because people want to help, but they don't know how. And then people have resources and they don't know who to give them to.
Exactly. So, we talk about the network. We have national partners that want to provide the resources. At our community level, we have our 9 affiliated communities that are following this approach. But to your question, what happens to those communities that aren't doing this? One, buy the book and it might spurn some thought about how to best serve veterans. The other piece is you can use America's Warrior Partnership Network. Just give us a call if you have a veteran that needs help and how you connect to it.
But there's a lot of organizations out there that are just doing the best they can. They say, I see a need here. I'm going to just put my head down. I'm going to try to serve them the best of my ability. And they're getting frustrated, and it seems like hopeless. There's a lot of challenges for them as a group that's trying to do the right thing. Being partnered with you guys or learning more about you guys can really make their life easier and help them serve more people more effectively.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the approaches that we take is not only to be proactive, but when we meet a veteran, it's holistic. And so we just don't say, so you have a housing problem? Let's solve for the housing problem.
Right.
We say, you have a housing problem. Let's look at your earned benefits. Let's look at your access to health care. Let's look at your education. Let's look at all the pieces that make up a good quality of life. And how do we connect all of those so that when we find a housing solution or when we find a job, it sticks.
And, right. It doesn't just put a Band-Aid on something that you think that was the problem, but really it was the problem that had more layers than that.
Yes. And one of the things that we found in the study was that veterans who were engaged 0 to 3 months. So if I'm a veteran and I came to your organization and you provided me with a service and that was the last contact I made. And this goes back to you, Bo. Right. This is the last contact I made. Their level of they feel 17% feel that their community supports them. However, those that are supported 6 months and beyond, where I maintain that relationship, I maintain the touch once a quarter. We do that same thing once a quarter. Right. When you do that, 83% feel like their community supports them.
Right.
And so, again, it's about building a relationship, not just a transaction, not just you need this. Here it is. Here's your Band-Aid. Is that cut the only thing you have going on in your...
And let's check back in to make sure that thing's healed right.
Yeah, maintain your relationship. I have a great story. A Desert Shield Storm a woman was an hourly employee, lost her job, ended up homeless, living in her car. We met her, got her first into housing, got her connected to her benefits, got her back to school, full-time job. 2 years later, she purchased a home using her GI home loan. She became a homeowner. She had a full-time job. Then she started to give back and volunteer, and she's one of the biggest volunteers we have. And so that's somebody who went from homelessness to give it to that inward to that external in 4 years. And then she's still there. She's phenomenal.
And that's what can really happen when they're just given – that these are resources they have at their disposal. They just don't know how to leverage them.
Correct. And how to navigate it. It's
complicated.
It is. The veteran system is an extremely complex system. And there are so many people out there who are doing good and want to do good. It's just a matter of how do you package it for that individual veteran. So it works out for them.
Right.
And it's the right service at the right time toward the right goal.
And it's ongoing. It's not just the one and done.
Yeah, exactly. And that's building up that relationship in a community. So if you have a community, so we'll take one of our northern communities. They've got 35,000 veterans that live in this one area. They have a relationship with about 10,000 of them. Do you think they can move a lot of things? They can get a lot of things to have happen. They just hit a button and they can talk to 10,000 veterans right. within a community to give back. It's powerful.
So now, if a company or a community wants to get involved and learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
Go to our website, americaswarriorpartnership.org, and you'll find everything about our programs, about the network, the book, and about this, more importantly, locally, about the symposium and our partner, the Warrior Alliance. The Warrior Alliance and Scott Johnson's doing great stuff here locally in Atlanta, and, He's a business guy who's focused on taking care of veterans.
And then if you're out there in the community and you are serving veterans, it's a good idea to get a hold of this playbook just for thought starters. You know, you don't have to commit to anything, but just to learn more about, hey, there might be a better way to do what you're doing now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. That's America's with an S, Warrior, not with an S, partnership.org. America's Warrior Partnership.org. Thank you so much, Jim, for what you do.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.